All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Evolved Idiots Podcast. As always, my name is Mike Mendoza.
Matthew Nathaniel. And today we have with us Fiorella Isabel. She's part of Independent Media Voice and co-host of The Convo Couch. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I really love the curtain back there.
Yeah, a little influence from the evolving mind, you know, of humanity.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the stoned ape theory?
No.
So that's really really part of kind of the inspiration for the show, or the thought behind
evolved
the show
idiots,
is
yeah.
The evolved idiots and the background as well. So theory is that apes, before man existed, started consuming psychedelic mushrooms, and it advanced the growth of the brain and evolved into humanity.
Honestly, like, that's a great theory. I feel like I've heard that before. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. It makes a lot of sense to me. Well, if you've done psychedelics, you kind of understand life a little bit. It's almost like taking something that, instead of taking a pill, you take, a natural substance and you understand your place and what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So whenever you want to check in and see, hey, like, am I doing the right thing? It's actually a good experience to have and to see, every time I've done it, I feel like life is like a journey, and you kind of reassess what you're doing, and you're more aware of what you need to do, and you're more aware of your relationships with people, and you're everything's fine. Because sometimes the anxieties of the world, I think, can get people to just feel overwhelmed or just start acting in a very robotic way, that you're so disconnected from really what it is to be a human being living this mm-hmm. experience, right?
Yeah. And that's why I think it's helped us all connect together as well, have a little more empathy with each other. Mm-hmm. And, that's why, what we were talking before we started recording, the benefits of it, helping with depression, ADD, all these things. And it's looking at all the studies happening with ketamine and MDMA, and also with psilocybin, microdosing there. It's getting a little bit more acceptable in the mainstream a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited to see, how particularly microdosing starts to take effect and gain popularity, just because, we joke often and what it would be like to microdose populations that are in conflict without them knowing, very subtly, if that might solve the problem.
Have we all thought about that? I definitely not.
I know that that's frowned upon. Dosing people unknowing to them is frowned upon. Yeah. But
the government's done it before.
Exactly. It wouldn't be the first time.
Hello, big pharma.
Sure. Exactly.
So, I'm glad you came on, because, I caught my attention, I suppose you could say, online, particularly on Twitter. I was caught you last year, particularly, during the protests and things, and kind of have really been following you pretty strongly since, and watching the Convo Couch and things like that, because it's really rare, I think, that people find voices out there that are willing to kind of criticize both sides, I wouldn't even say criticize, but, reflect upon both sides and evaluate both sides with an even hand, because so often right now we're, very tribal. You pick a team and that's your team. And so I really gravitate towards that. And I think we need to see more of that out there, obviously. And I kind of, for a lot of people, that I talk to, because I do, work with sort of people who are figuring out how to get involved politically. How would you, what was your journey, or how did you decide to kind of get involved and start saying, instead of being the person that reads about it on the news and says, man, that's terrible, I'm just going to tweet about it, to the person that says, I'm actually going to go out there and be in that protest, or I'm going to, launch a show and do something and start, trying to get the more voices out there?
Yeah. So initially I was in entertainment and the entertainment industry. One of the things that I went to school for was I went to school for journalism / public relations and English writing. So I was always into it. I was always into asking questions, into writing. But when I came into LA and there was so much focus on just this whole superficiality of Hollywood and like how just like people just aren't real. And then you start seeing like the complete drastic contrast with like homelessness here. Like it was pretty bad already when I got here 8 years ago. I mean, now it's like ridiculously out of control. But you start noticing those things. And then Bernie Sanders launched his campaign to run for president. And I, you know, had been an Obama supporter before, but I obviously had lost any sort of respect for Obama. But I still wasn't like, I knew he was bad and I knew things were bad, but I didn't feel like there was anybody there that represented anything remotely to what I believed. And then when Sanders started speaking out, you know, he just kind of ignited the sort of, hey, like, you're not alone. There are other people who think about these things like you do. And he was the underdog at that point. I remember him having his rallies with barely any people there. And he just grew and grew and grew. And when I was coming, when I was working here, I had a side job, as every artist usually does. And I was in the hospitality industry. And I was a bartender and a cocktail server. And I met my co-host at a restaurant where he was working as like a manager. And somebody had said, oh, that's a Bernie person. Oh, that's another Bernie person. And so we started, you know, like talking about things. And like, I would go on Facebook and I would say things. Then he saw that. He was like, hey, can you come and defend me over here? Can you write this post for me? And I was like, sure. And so then we just started talking about how I had been wanting to do something. He had been wanting to do something. And we just became friends and started thinking about launching a show. And then we did it. And initially, we wanted to be the type of show that was more like a good morning type of show where you just get up in the mornings and you have coffee with us. And it's evolved into like news, and it's evolved into journalism. It's evolved into, you know, filming protests and filming the police, and then going into like elections and mm-hmm. all of these things that it's evolved into. Right. But it didn't start out like that. And one of the things that really got us into politics was how there was so much corruption in California that's supposed to be a progressive state. And we learned through activists and people involved in the California Democratic Party how the Democratic Party was always pushing out progressives, right? And then that evolved into after 2016 and after Bernie, you know, after Bernie lost, and we know that the DNC went in the back room and said, hey, we can pick whoever we want. Mm-hmm. And all of these things, that was like, that's it. It's like, we don't have a choice. We personally started understanding, like, it's really hard to feel like your vote matters. And this is why people don't vote. Because a lot of my friends who aren't political, they always say, well, I don't vote because it doesn't matter. And especially the younger generations too. And so now it's kind of like we went from electoral politics to direct action. So now we're like, more so like telling people like we need to get on the streets, we need to start demanding certain things that other, you know, in other countries they would be out on the streets already for. And you know, this is like now the next step. And I think everybody's on a journey of evolvement when it comes to the where you go from as a person who thinks you can make change electorally. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of lost faith that we can make any change electorally significantly without first pushing any direct action. So that's where we're at now. And it's crazy to see how I would say radicalized I've become in terms of really, really starting to branch out and talking to a lot of people who may be deemed Republicans or, you know, Trumpers. And I find that some of those people are actually more open to learning something because they feel like they were wronged this time. Just kind of like burners felt like they were wronged in 2016 and then the 2020 primaries, the right feels like they were wrong too. So it's been interesting talking to them about elections. It's been interesting talking to some people who, you know, will tell them stop bringing in communism or Venezuela or China or the ghost of Hugo Chavez when you're talking about elections, because it just discredits you. Focus on the issue itself. And, you know, when I talk to liberals though, sometimes it's almost like they feel like they know better. Like they know better than you. So it's harder to talk to them sometimes. And that's kind of a controversial thing to say, I guess, because it's like, well, you'd rather talk to a fascist than a liberal. It's like, no, I'll talk to the liberal too. But it's just, they are set in their ways. A lot of liberals come from college education, very like, you know, this, I mean, I'm college educated too. That's, it's not like putting that down. I'm just saying like, you should be more open to learning things, to questioning. It's crazy. Back in the day, the left used to be the ones who were pro free speech. They were pro like questioning things. They were deemed the conspiracy theorists. Now you flash to towards after the 80s or 90s, there was that, you know, that shift in culture too, where the conservatives were the ones that were like watching your language, watch your language. You can't say this, you can't say that. Now it's like, oh, the conservatives are like free speech. And the liberals are like, no, more control. We don't want to hear that. It's kind of, it's all messed up.
Well, if you follow, if you really are paying attention, it's really quite nuanced, because it really depends on what's being said as to whether or not it should be allowed or not, according to that side.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. It's if it agrees with them, then free speech. And if it doesn't agree with them and they don't like it, then it's, that shouldn't be said.
Yeah. Censorship.
It really doesn't matter which side it is.
Sure.
And it's creating such a division. Like, how do you see a way to bridge that gap so that we can have more conversations with people, you know, from that are Trumpers, that are Bernie people? Because the whole journey you just described, your evolution, so to speak, really is a common thread. Like, that's really my journey as well. Like, I followed politics for a long time. I knew it was very important into how reality really functions, but I didn't really, you know, take it serious, you know, until I heard Bernie, and I felt for the first time like there was a voice for how I felt, like, for the most part. Like, and at the very least with Bernie as well, he was the first person that I had come across as a politician that I felt like I didn't agree with maybe 100% of everything he said, but like, I honestly felt like he wanted to do good for people more than just be there for greed and power and manipulating. And that's really what I think is ultimately more important. We got to get people in there that maybe don't even want the job. You know what I mean? Like, they want, or they want it for really the right reasons.
Yeah, no, I did feel that way at that point about Bernie. And you can tell, like, when somebody, one of the reasons Trump won is because he came across to many people. He wasn't, but he came across to many people as an outsider, as a guy who tells it like it is, as not a politician. So that's why, like, a lot of people were like, hey, that guy's not a politician. Clinton, she's the Clinton dynasty. You know, we don't want that anymore. That screwed up a lot of people. And a lot of the reasons why you saw certain counties in 2016 go from Bernie to Trump, especially West Virginia. Let's look at West Virginia as a state as a whole. That whole state went entirely red for Trump initially. Bernie Sanders won that state. So that just tells you that when you're paying attention to people's economic concerns, you know, at that point, NAFTA, TPP ruined a lot of people's lives in middle America. And when you go talk to people and you don't say, hey, you're, you know, an awful person because you're white and you must be, you know, an awful person. You start talking to them about their economics. They all have the same concerns. Unfortunately, what happens a lot is that people get pitted against each other. You know, the white working class guy gets told that the immigrants are taking his job when it's really corporations outsourcing their jobs abroad. And so it's that connecting the dots. Same thing with the immigrant situation. We have immigration issues because of our foreign policy, and nobody ever talks about that. And so when you start hitting those points with people, and you don't have to label it, you don't have to say this is socialism, this is communism, this is capitalism, this is ism. But you just talk to them from person to person, and like, you have a conversation, you find out that most Americans of the working class, which is most people that aren't extremely wealthy, they have the same concerns. They want to, they care about their kids, their school, their health care, and, you know, just putting food on the table. That's the immediate basic human needs that have to be met first in order for you to like feel good and start doing something creatively as a human being. And I think we've lost sight that those are the basic things. And I think that's where the connection is. When you go out and you talk to people one-on-one, for instance, in Iowa, when I was there for the primary, there were conservatives supporting co-ops without knowing that they were co-ops. There were grocery stores that were co-ops, and they were like, yeah, that's great. You know, if you work there, then you own part of the company, and it's really awesome. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, okay. That's a co-op, but all right, that's cool. Like, and it's Iowa. You wouldn't expect this to be there. And I think that if we stopped making assumptions about people before talking to them and just actually have conversations with them about, you know, what are your concerns? What do you care about? That's where you start making inroads. And I think people are at a point right now where they're looking for leadership. They're looking for people, for somebody to look up to. But we also have to learn as Americans that we have to be the ones leading too. We have to be the ones setting the tone of what's happening, because I think we're running out of time in terms of how we're going to sustain what we have as a country when we're being manipulated against each other. It's called this culture war, right? It's this culture war where you have people on the right that always blame China or blame communism. Then you have people on the left always blaming Russia, or the left, like Democrats blaming Russia, blaming, you know, some other outlier that's not them. And, you know, focusing on the white supremacist domestic terrorists and hate, you know, go hate all these people that were there on January 6th. And then you have the right saying, go hate Antifa. And it's like, if you play into that, you're just playing into the back and forth, because none of those things are accurate. None of those things are accurate. I was there on January 6th. I was also covering the protests before that, all the protests. And, you know, none of these groups are monolithic. What everybody that was there on January 6th wasn't an evil white supremacist. Everybody that's Antifa isn't an evil, crazy person that wants to, like, just burn the whole country down. The none of this is monolithic, and we have to stop acting like it is.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I mean, we were just talking last week about how, you know, manufactured, and it is the manufactured distractions to keep people from focusing on the real war, which the real war to me, as I see it, is really a socioeconomic war. There's really like the 1%, and then there really is the rest of us. I mean, people who, I know there's a huge difference between someone who makes $60,000 a year and somebody who makes $240,000 a year, but we're all still fighting against people who keep consolidating wealth and power smaller and smaller and smaller into their hands. And we're all in it together. And all these other distractions, whether it's, you know, gender identity or, you know, Dr. Seuss or whatever it is, like
Mr. Potato
Head. these things just, they don't matter. Like, I know they do matter sort of maybe to somebody, but on what level and at what cost?
Yeah, it's symbolic. And they make you focus on the symbolic. What they do is a lot of progressives have actually, unfortunately, turned into, allow themselves to get like caught up in this, because they, what they do is they manipulate your emotions, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a left-leaning person, chances are you're more empathetic. Like, you know, for me, it's like, I don't want to like invade other countries, not just because it's a waste of money, it is, but also because I care about not killing people. So I think that's important. So what they do is they weaponize your emotions against you. And they say, oh, see, that person, that if you don't care about Dr. Seuss and setting this right, then you're not a true progressive. Mm-hmm. And so you have to make this your concern, and you have to respect this and that, and focus on these symbolic things. I'm not saying, you know, LGBTQ issues or trans issues or issues of respect aren't important. I'm just saying they're being weaponized against you.
Absolutely.
They're being absolutely just completely because at the end of the day, right, none of these people in power, none of these 1%ers, none of these billionaires are actually doing anything to help anybody, including, of course, the most marginalized people who happen to be of these groups and categories. So why are you fighting with what somebody is, you know, saying, even if they're wrong and ignorant on it? You're not going to change that person's perspective in that way. You're just not. Mm-hmm. This is like, the government can't rule on culture. It just can't. It's not their role to tell somebody, hey, you're being an asshole. Like, people are going to be assholes. The way to do that is to combat that, is to have more conversations saying, hey, that person's an asshole, but this is really what's going on, and let's talk about this. Instead, what's happened is a lot of the left has become extremely authoritarian in the sense of let's shut down free speech. Let's take Trump off Twitter. Let's take him off Facebook.
Deplatform
yeah. all these fascists. Some of these people that they want to deplatform, number one, aren't even fascists. That word is thrown around very, very, like, just like it's nothing now.
People don't read enough history to know what that is, probably.
That's the thing. And it's like, if you were in front of a real fascist, I'm telling you, most of you would, like, wouldn't even recognize it. Because now, fascism, and this is something that, you know, no matter how much theory you've read on Marx or Lenin or, you know, anybody that is propped up, they didn't come into contact with big tech. Big tech is a whole other way that we can be controlled in an authoritarian way. And that's where what's happening right now is Google owns YouTube, and YouTube is going off on so many people. They're shutting everybody down. They're, you know, demonetizing channels, ours included. They're taking down videos. You can't question anything on elections, on COVID. So that's part of it, too.
Yeah, I saw that. I wanted to ask you, like, what is, I just saw where YouTube is releasing some new rules. And it's, if I understand it right, it basically gives them discretion that if a channel isn't worth it, they're just going to take you off the platform.
Yeah, it's a very, for the left, it's a very capitalistic mindset. They said, if you're not commercially viable and to their sole discretion, they can decide to just completely take you off the platform. So if I'm not commercially viable to Susan Wojcicki, who is a big pro-democratic establishment donor, pro, you know, big tech, people like that, if you're not like, if they don't find you like that, they can make money off of you basically in a way that supersedes what you're saying, right? Because that's the excuse. It's like, oh yeah, we can't make money off of you. It's not just that. It's like, they don't want you to say certain things that are going to ruin the state narrative. So they can use that as an excuse and say, well, if you're talking about Syria and the fake chemical attacks, then you're not going to be monetized. So yeah, you're not viable to us. It's just another way of them shutting people out, right? Because let's be frank, if you're talking about US imperialism or you're talking against the Democratic Party or even against the Republican establishment, all of these, you know, culture war talking points, if you're going against that, yeah, your videos get demonetized anyway. So yeah. How are you going to be commercially viable? <Oops. laughs>
So where are, because this is a growing number of people that are on YouTube that are going to fall into this. I mean,
yeah.
Where are they all going to go to? There's got to be, you know, because YouTube is no longer YouTube at this point, really. What it, you know, originally was. It was a platform where anybody could put up anything, yep. Any kind of wild shit you wanted to see.
Yeah.
You know, you could go to YouTube, you could listen to it. There were crazy people that were talking about stuff that was completely out of this world. And there were smart people giving lectures and, you know, giving good information out there. And it was up to, like you said earlier, it's up to the individual to some extent to take responsibility themselves to vet information and make wise choices and consider things. And, you know, maybe that's a failing of the education system because, you know, we get taught a lot how to do a lot of things in school that don't apply to real life, depending on what you go into, obviously. But the one thing that they don't really focus on, or they focused on very little, for me at least, was critical thinking, you know, and that's the most valuable thing because it's the thing you continue to use and it's how you disseminate information and decide what is good information, what is true, what is not, how can I test that?
Yeah. And even then, I mean, you know, like I agree, like there isn't a lot of attention put into critical thinking, but at the same time, it's like, it's by design. Let's not kid ourselves. Like, you know, you are taught to be a certain way. Like we were talking before, you know, they want to medicate kids. They want to make sure that, you know, kids who are deemed having ADHD get on a pill so they can pay attention, so they can not behave like kids, so they can behave like robots. Our school system is entirely structured that way. And if you don't fit in, then you're deemed some sort of, you know, like, oh, this kid is not okay, or they're this or that. There's something wrong with you instead of the system. So that's how you're taught to grow up. And so when people don't trust their government, and you add that part in there, when people don't trust their government, when we find out that your government's been lying to you for decades, and you ask questions and they gaslight you, people are going to make shit up. They're just going to make things up.
Yeah.
They're going to create their own theories, because guess what? You're not telling them the truth. So they're going to find something that fits into their paradigm, which is what, QAnon was. That's a psyop. It's a psyop. It's an obvious psyop. But for people who understand that, it's an obvious psyop. But for a lot of people, it's like, wait a minute, maybe this is true, because guess what? They lied about this. They lied about that. They lied about weapons of mass destruction. Why wouldn't they lie about that? And nobody's confirming or denying anything. So guess what? I'm going to make my mind up. And the only solution to that is more information, right? It's not marking everything as disinformation or making sure that somebody stays within your narrative, because then all you have is just one giant echo chamber of people agreeing with each other. And like, it's honestly, it's just scary. It's very Orwellian in its character. It's just like, you can't, you know, war is peace. It's like, wait a minute. No, it's not. Like, let's think critically. I think that thinking, not thinking critically too, is not just something that happens on the right. It happens with liberals thinking that Russia is everywhere. Russia's under your bed. Russia is here right now in this room with us.
It used to be the Republicans that thought that.
Exactly. Like just questioning things too. You can't even question anything anymore. You can't even say, hey, oh, I'm good on the vaccine. I don't feel like it's necessary. You can't even say that now. It's like crazy.
They're gonna come for you.
Yeah, it's insane, because like, free speech is, to me, it's maybe the most fundamental of our rights. Mm-hmm. And it's what's even crazier to me is that people aren't fighting for it as much as they should be. You know, because there are people on both sides of the aisle that are kind of wanting to censor. And then, you know, the rest of us in the middle are caught trying to disseminate, trying to figure it out. And, you know, it makes it into a situation where, you know, where are we going with this, and how can we prevent it? Because that's really kind of where we're at. Because if we lose the right to be able to have free speech, we lose the thought. We lose our free thought, essentially.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, 100%. This is why, you know, in the recent, you know, like last year and a half to two, we've really amped up our focus on free speech, especially because we've been attacked. So when you're attacked, you feel it yourself. You're like, wait a minute, like now we can't even say this. What's going on? We can't even talk about anything. We didn't do anything wrong. We weren't even spreading misinformation. Like the New York Times, the Washington Post, all of these outlets, they constantly lie. They lied about weapons of mass destruction. They lied about Russiagate. They lied about all these things, Syrian chemical attacks, all these things. But they're still there. They don't get any, like, you know, they're completely just devoid of any accountability. Meanwhile, any YouTube channel or any independent media journalist gets deemed a conspiracy theorist or you know, an Assadist or a Putinist or whatever is the latest, you know, term. If they're questioning the state narrative. And one of the reasons why it's so important now more than ever is because of Julian Assange. Julian Assange, of course, is still in Belmarsh prison right now for exposing U.S. war crimes and crimes of the West, too, for pretty much telling the truth. I mean, they have 100% accuracy rate on WikiLeaks. And that's one of the things that inspired me, too, is the cables and seeing, you know, those videos, that video in particular. And reading about how my suspicions were confirmed about the DNC and Hillary Clinton and all of that. It was just, to me, that was like, wow, like this is it. This is a turning point. This is it. And the way they have smeared that man, the way they have treated him, it's a threat to not just journalists. It's an obvious threat to journalists that actually want to do real journalism and actually want to pursue the truth, because that should be, you know, journalism was supposed to be the watchdog of the government. And that's, it's complicit now in government crimes. It's also affecting everybody else, because if they take down a journalist who's not even American, an Australian person, the United States government extradites Julian Assange and is able to prosecute him in a trial that you and I can't see, that would set a precedent that would just destroy anything else, along with what we're seeing right now with YouTube and all of that. It's scary times. And really, more than ever, we have to fight for people like Julian Assange, for us, for our free speech, against censorship, against this technocratic panopticon that's happening and coming towards us with big tech merging with our government. You know, it's always funny because the right's always like, oh, well, big government's the problem. And then you got the liberals saying, well, corrupt rich people are the problem. And I'm like, they're working in tandem right now. They're in charge of your government. They are the government.
Yeah.
And now you add in big tech and you just have like the trifecta of coming after the average civilian. And it's turning, if they can't turn you against each other, then they're going to have to just censor you and control what is said and what is heard, so you don't really get to go after the people at the very top. And that's why, you know, all of us should be free speech advocates. All of us should be a civilian journalist. Anybody right now can go take their phone and film something and do it. And that's what they're afraid of, because now that's a two-way street. That's one of the reasons why what was happening in Palestine is such a big deal now, because of the phone thing, because of TikTok, because of all these avenues that they're trying to now shut down.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think it's like the way I kind of see it now too, is to me, as I've watched the news, because many years ago, I kind of leaned conservative, and I would say fiscally, I kind of still am, but my views socially have evolved tremendously since I was, and I'm talking when I was like a teenager, I was conservative. And so I don't even know if that counts. But regardless, I've evolved quite a bit in my views on quite a number of other things. And, you know, it was, now that I've seen it, I've watched the news evolve as well. You know, Fox has always been known as the super right conservative. That's the Republican thing. And for a while, it seemed like there were still some neutral news sources. But watching the evolution since Trump, I would almost now say that Fox and some of a couple others are really the state media for the Republican Party. And, you know, CNN and MSNBC are, and a couple others are, the state part, or, you know, state news for the Democratic Party. And the way that, you're right, that the way that they've treated Bernie, not once, but twice, ultimately, they just flat out cheated him the first time. The second time, they conspired against him.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, I personally have kind of lost hope that we can reform either party. And so what I want to focus on really, you know, moving forward, because I think it's the only route, is to have a viable third party created. But it seems so difficult to make that happen. Like, do you, you're obviously way more involved even, you know, than I am. Like, do you think that's like something that is viable, like this unity party or the People's Party or anything like that?
So one of the things that I think failed too was the pushback from Bernie against our election system, against the media, and against just the entire Democratic establishment, the establishment as a whole, right? Because the establishment is Democrat and Republican. He didn't push back on that. He didn't talk about elections. I am an election integrity activist. I mean, I know I can talk about elections, the ins and outs of everything that's there, whether it's voter suppression, which is through long lines or less machines and not enough people working, or provisional ballots and that never get counted, whether it's, you know, the fact that our elections are privately owned and we don't have access to look into them, or whether it is that they're easily connected to the internet, they're easily hackable, or the fact that, you know, there is no chain of custody when you're moving mail-in ballots. There's no actual procedure. There's no watchdog looking at what's going on. So when you have a system like that, right, it's designed to just make you feel like you have a choice when you really don't. This is why we have people who are in power who don't represent any of us, who don't represent the vast majority of people. When over 60% of people on both the Democratic and Republican Party are for some sort of nationalized healthcare system, and then nobody is pushing that. Well, that just, you know, besides the people that lost, that just tells you that obviously we're not electing the people who represent us. So who who, like, how are these people getting elected? And that goes for Congress too. The vast majority of the time, you have to be a certain way to get elected. And so you're right. There is no reforming the Democratic Party or Republican Party. There's only a third party. You know, there's a need for a third party. There's a need to have a multi-party system. Yeah. The problem with that is that our elections are shite. Our elections are just awful, especially just going over everything, like from 2016 and on, just seeing everything and seeing the, like, even in 2020, the Iowa primary, how that was conducted with the app, and just looking at the difference between when I was in Las Vegas and they did a caucus, and it was literally handwritten paper ballots who won by, like, so many votes. Of course, it was Bernie Sanders because it was hand counted paper ballots and there was the media there and you could see everything. Well, that's how our election should be conducted. Once we have a fair election system, then we can talk about a third party, but we don't have a fair election system. So I find it very difficult to think they're going to allow you to have a third party. Like, how, in order to have a third party, you need to have an even keel with the two-party system, which they do everything in their power to allow that to not happen. The only way, I think, would be ranked choice voting on a national level, which is, I think, something that a lot of people are pushing for. Yeah. And I think it's extremely important. But also, you know, for them not to control the elections, our elections need to be transparent. We need to make sure people have faith in the system, because if people don't have faith in the system, then it's going to fail as well. And so, yes, I want a third party. I want a multi-party system. I want the Green Party to really, you know, get their shit together and, like, come and, like, because they should be out there organizing more. MPP, another one, like, please go out there and start, you know, involving yourself in what's going on in the world, what's going on in foreign policy wise in Palestine, what's going on here locally. I just don't see these parties really involve themselves enough into the mainstream, into talking to normal, regular people, because there's a lot of people that are fed up with the system. Yeah. They just don't know what to do about it and they need guidance. And I think in order for us to have a viable third party, we are going to need to really get out on the streets at some level and demand some sort of fairness in our elections, some sort of hey, you guys can't, we're going to have a third party. You guys can't bring them down in any way, shape, or form. In HR1, that bill that Democrats are pushing to pass, it makes it next to impossible for a third party to have an even platform. They need to raise more money, and they're just, it's not fair because you have lobbyists and you have all of these things at hand. So it's kind of a catch-22, right? It's like the chicken or the egg. It's like, how do we elect better people? Oh, well, we have a third party. Okay. But then how do we have a third party if our elections are screwed? So it's like, what do you do first? And I think the only solution I can think of is raise awareness on how bad our elections are, put out options on how to fix it. And then also get people to understand that if we want to fix things electorally, you first need to really make a push for it on the ground. Change never comes from somebody signing a piece of paper out of just the goodness of their heart. They're forced to do that.
Still a resolution.
A symbolic non-binding resolution. That's where I'm at with that.
Yeah. I don't know. I agree. I don't think they're going to obviously they don't going to make it easy to have a third party. I also don't think they're going to give the reform to make it easy to have a third party. And so, like, and I agree, like, there's so all these individual options other than Democrats or Republicans, they all just fall so short.
Yeah.
Because they're not encompassing. And it really makes me wonder if to have a real threat at the Democrats and Republicans, it'll almost take an independent that would be willing, say Bernie Sanders, say 10 years ago, stepping out on his own, or, you know, and saying, screw you to the Democratic Party, and having maybe an enclave of super wealthy people. And that might be the breaking point, but that might be the thing, because I know he doesn't want to do that. And I love that about him. I love that about him. But he might have to, you know, or whoever does it might have to be able to do that and then have the ground swelling, because he's already proven that you can support a candidacy from common donors.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely been proven. And the failure of that is that, you know, nobody does it. And nobody does it because they know that it's losing.
Is Bernie just too nice? Like, why?
I mean,
he just never tells them to, he plays just enough ball with them to like stay. I feel like he plays just enough that he feels like it's like a, you know, Jocko Willink.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of like I've heard him say many times where it's like, you know, do you just tell them to fuck off and leave, or do you stay in there and try and mitigate the harm?
So my opinion, you know, of Bernie has shifted as well. Just as I've evolved more, I feel like he really let people down. I mean, I will always be thankful to Bernie because, like I said, he brought me. He shed light on a lot of things that brought me on this journey, but I feel like he didn't speak out enough regarding the elections. He did this again, and he put people, which I followed intrinsically, right? He put people that were problematic in his campaign that were from the establishment that should have never, ever been there. He surrounded himself with the wrong people. And it seemed like the second run was more of like, it wasn't even like like as hard fought as the first. And like, it really just felt to a lot of people who are extremely pro Bernie, a lot of people are just like so done with him because it's like he's just repeating the same state narratives that a lot of these establishment people are saying. Now, I still feel that Sanders did have like intent. Like, I still feel like he was a good person at heart. I just feel like he really like just failed to really fight back. And I don't know why, whether, you know, people say he was threatened, whether he's just done fighting. We see that with a lot of the activists, right? A lot of like Angela Davis is one of them. Yeah. You know, she was even telling people to vote for Biden. We see that happening as people age. It's like, okay, we're tired. Yeah. You know, even Cornel West, like when we had him on the show, he was like, well, you know, Biden is blah, blah, blah. And so it's just like, for me, it's like, I think it's an age thing. Yeah. And I think it's an age thing. And I think it's also, you know,
they've just been beaten down so much.
Yeah. And like, I think here's the hard truth, right? I think in order to get anywhere, and this is going to sound really like, I don't know, really like just cynical, but in order to get anywhere in politics, you have to vow some sort of allegiance to the establishment. Because when Bernie Sanders was mayor of Burlington, Vermont, post and pre-1986 Bernie, that Bernie, he was talking about the Sandinistas movement. He was talking about, you know, very lefty revolutionary yeah. ideas. The moment he got into Congress, backed off. The moment you touch the national security state and the war machine, that's when you are a target. We can look to Robert Kennedy. We can look to JFK. We can look to every activist from Malcolm X to Fred Hampton and see once they started not just criticizing, you know, capitalism, but imperialism, the empire as a whole, and started going after, hey, these are the institutions. Let's come together as a people and fight back the 1%. That's when you start being in danger. And I think Bernie has largely escaped that because if you look at his foreign policy record, he hasn't been great on foreign policy. And I think that's one of the criticisms and one of the reasons why people started supporting people like Tulsi Gabbard or other anti-war candidates. Because of that, they felt like he lacked that aspect. Like, by the way, nobody, no politician out there is really that great on foreign policy right now. I mean, we had Ron Paul. Who is decent as a libertarian. And then you had also, what's his name? Was it the really old guy that ran? I don't know what his name is.
Ron Paul's about the only one I can only think of.
No, you're talking about Ron. But anyway, he was extremely anti-war. But and then you have Cynthia McKinney, who was elected. She used to be very anti-war. She's very progressive, but she was just pushed as a conspiracy theorist now, and they destroy your reputation or they push you out. So I think it's one of those things where Bernie did stay in there. He did play ball sometimes and he's there. He influenced a lot of people, you know, of this generation and younger, but I don't think he was ever going to be the guy to really like lead the revolution. And I think he said it many times. I mean, he said the whole thing was not me, us, right? Or like, it's not about me, it's you. And like, and that's the truth. If you want to take anything positive, no matter how you feel about Bernie now, it's not about a politician. It's not about AOC. It's not about the squad. It's about people making the change because they're supposed to serve you. And we need to stop being cheerleaders to these politicians because at the end of the day, a politician is going to be a politician.
Yeah.
Making them into celebrities.
Yeah. Don't put them on pedestals.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're all human beings like the rest of us, but they also are involved in the DC Beltway where they live in a world that doesn't, you know, consider the world we live in. And that's something we have to come to terms with. No matter how likable a politician is, they're still a politician.
Yeah. You know, it even makes me think about, you know, you touched on something else there. You were talking about, you know, the foreign policy and kind of the war machine. And that's one of the craziest things that people on, you know, that support the military but are against socialism that I find very contradictory is that we already have socialism. Our military is the greatest socialist program in the entire world as it's ever seen, in fact. And we just keep giving it more money and we neglect everything else here at home as secondary. And, you know, you mentioned also earlier, you know, January 6th, and I kind of start to wonder, and it's even more concerning because I don't know who's going to push back against this because there are already people on the right that are pro-military and invade people's privacy and monitor them. But now we're seeing that on the left, too. I mean, what was it? AOC and some other people just put forth a bill that was, you know, going to like, give them private details or something through the Capitol Police. I really worry about like an expansion of a Patriot Act 2.0.
Yeah.
And again, back to manufactured distractions, no one's paying attention and it's just happening.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. We covered that, I think, yesterday. It's crazy because if you even look at progressive media, most of them, oh, yay, AOC, Bernie, they put out resolutions. This is great, blah, blah, blah. But they don't talk about how the resolutions, both of them, were dead on arrival because the 15-day window was like yesterday and they weren't going to get it in time. And it was just, even CNN said, this is more symbolic than anything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, great. Like, we can pat ourselves on the back. We tried. And Palestinians don't care they're still living in apartheid, you know, they're still in the situations that they're in. So what? Okay, fine. You feel good. Now what? So simultaneously as that was happening, they had this January 6th bill. I forget what the actual number is, but basically it's there to give billions of dollars, right? To almost 2 billion.
Where did they come up with that money?
Exactly. You know, out of nowhere, by the way.
We haven't got any money for you guys, but we need $2 billion right here.
Money.
Yeah. And it includes security detail. It includes money for the Department of Justice, for the FBI, for the National Guard. It includes money for riot gear for Capitol Police and by security detail, not just like, it's not just a bodyguard. It's also like barriers. They specify barriers or any sort of protective barriers for any sort of event that may happen. So they're saying for January 6th, because of what happened on January 6th and moving forward. So what are they expecting? Are they expecting another, you know, riot? Do they feel that Americans are very much just completely done? And a lot of them are feeling just the weight of not, you know, of this pandemic and all of the things that have happened and the economic just fallout. Are they, you know, so basically they're protecting themselves. This is directly only for the Capitol Police, by the way. This is directly only for that area. It's not the entire, you know, defense bill. This is separate from that, as if we need more money for police. And the people who voted present were AOC, Rashida Tlaib, and Jamal Bowman. All of these people have supported BLM, have said on multiple occasions the police need to be reformed, ACAB. But no, it doesn't matter. It's not, you know, all cops aren't bastards if they're protecting me. And so they're giving money to law enforcement agencies. By the way, it says it right there in the legislation, the Capitol Police are not allowed to give the footage of their body cam footage to anybody, including another police agency, until they consult with each other, and it's deemed okay. Of course, they have to consult with Congress because they're there to protect Congress people. And so now we're hiding body cam footage. Isn't the public allowed to know? What about journalists? Aren't we allowed to know what's going on? And like, it's very hypocritical. It's crazy. One of the things that we know we didn't need more on January 6th was police. You needed more police there at that time, but it wasn't for lack of money. It wasn't because police they didn't on the have payroll. It.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was exactly. And so we know that that's what happened. I mean, these people were let in. I mean, I was there. Like, these people were let in. It was like they were given a tour, basically. And like, you know, and I had more police surrounding me a few days when I did force the vote, when I had a megaphone on. They were coming around. They were getting ready to arrest us for talking about healthcare for all. But where were all those people, all those police officers that day? It wasn't for a lack of money. It was just designed that way. The FBI director came out and said, oh, you know, there were warnings sent, but blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And so we know that that's not the case, right? So this is just another excuse to amp up their civil liberties, bring down yours, because who gets hurt from all this money being put into weapons against protesters? Oh, that's right. Anybody protesting the government. And that's just one aspect of it. And since Joe Biden came in, by the way, the Department of Homeland Security has had revealed that they are spying on Americans' social media. The post office has a division where they're doing the same thing. They're looking at people's social media. They're saying, oh, this is January 6th related. They're implementing pre-crime. They're all of these things are happening. And it's these crackdowns that are very, very scary. And nobody pays attention to it because it's not as blatant as something that is emotional, right? It's like people are like, just, you know, oh, it's nothing to do with wages. It's nothing to do with anything. So they're just like, oh, okay, it's fine. But no, it's not fine, because it's gonna really like hit us before we know it. They do want the Patriot Act 3.0 or 2.0.
As somebody who I have to admit, I've still a fan of his, but for different reasons, grew up kind of listening to Alex Jones. It's insane to see, you know, the conspiracy theorist in me kind of starts to come out, and it's like almost textbook. And I don't know if they're consciously in on a conspiracy to make all this happen, or if they're just ignorant to it and they're just like, they don't realize that they're doing all the things that are going to build like this military, you know, authoritarian state. And it's same socioeconomically as well. It's creating that division between the haves and the have nots, a controlling class and a serf class, you know, if you know, for whatever term you want to put on it. You know, I don't know. It's just insane to see all this unfolding. And then you see, you know, I saw today where they're, you know, releasing smoke bombs over in Palestine in the West Bank with drones. And it's like, how long before they're going to just implement that and give that to the police, you know, to hear to use at home?
Well, that's the thing. One of the things that I noticed while covering the protest in 2020 was that the United States has brought its imperialism home. And it's only a fraction of what we do. But when I was in Portland, right, the weapons that were unleashed on protesters, the tactical, you know, structure of it was extremely like, oh, these protesters are enemies and we are attacking them. The gear, the riot shields, the weapons, we collected actually some weapons there. We've collected weapons in LA, these gas canisters. Obviously, they're all made by the defense industry. These are like military grade weapons that cause damage to your lungs, to your eyes, to your breathing. I've experienced it. I thought I was going to die. Like, you just can't breathe. Like, you're just like, wow. And these are the vast majority of the protesters in these areas are young people, like very young people. And, you know, it's just crazy to me. When did it become okay to treat protesters this way? And then I go back, I'm like, wait a minute.
It's always been this way.
Been this way. Yeah, it's just our weapons have gotten, you know, better, more technologically savvy. It's always been this way. You can go back and look at what happened in Chicago, what happened, you know, it's just, it's this is something that a lot of us need to come to terms with. America has always been an empire, and its sole existence is a contradiction. And the reality is that not only is America bringing their imperialism home, they're trying to turn people against each other so we don't turn on them. Because otherwise, like, people would realize, hey, wait a minute, like, why are we, you know, here talking about, you know, the Proud Boys? Yeah, the Proud Boys, they're bad, like, whatever. But, like, do they have power? Who has the power here? Who really, you know, has the ability to make change? And it's like, you realize it's a lot of the wealthy people at the top. And when you start seeing how these sort of conspiracy theories that you know, you mentioned Alex Jones, it's like, well, conspiracy theories often come from a little bit of truth,
yeah,
right? They're based on a little bit of truth. So it's not going to be exactly like aliens coming down,
I feel like the X-Files are unfolding before our eyes, actually.
I got the documents. Let's go.
We have a lot of, what is it, the smoke guy. What was his name?
Smoking Man.
The Smoking Man. There's a lot of those in D.C., man. When I was there, I was like, wow, this is every one of these. Because the FBI, when we were doing the Assange protests, the FBI was literally like lying down the street, like watching. And we're like, okay. Because we were at the Department of Justice. So maybe that's why. I don't know. But it's like, okay, so this is real, like that there's a lot of us, right? There's a lot of people and a lot of us aren't happy. So they're like, okay, we have to control this. And if the way to control this is to, hey, why don't we also pass some laws against the Second Amendment? Biden was pushing this bill that would allow the police to come in and do warrantless confiscation of guns. And nobody was talking about that. It's like, hello, he literally just got in office and they're pushing this. And they've been pushing a lot of that. Now, my Second Amendment evolution, I went from like, let's control, AR-15s. We don't need those. Why do people need those? To everybody go get one of those and like arm yourself, because the government is armed and we're not, and we need to be like that. I did a whole flip on that. Like, I never wanted to ban guns, but I was more like more control. And then as I saw, and that was like in maybe like 2015, 2014, I was more for gun control. As like now, fast forward to now, I'm like, no, like everybody, like, just how can we disarm people when we have a military that's heavily armed? The police are pretty much trained by the military. Like, at least here in LA, they were trained by the IDF playbook, which is crazy. Another thing nobody talks about. And so how are we going to like disarm people? Right. And so what you're starting to see is militia groups like the Boogaloo Boys, like Black Panthers Return, and all these groups coming in and fighting back. And even some of the protesters are still like, wait a minute. No, you have guns. No, it's like, guys, come on. Like, this is like, it's your Second Amendment right to have a gun. It's your First Amendment right to protest. Yeah. These things are intrinsically connected. Like, this is our way of fighting back. It is in our Declaration of Independence, actually, that if the government fails, the people have the right to overthrow the government. That isn't the Declaration of Independence. It's in the Constitution that you have your government should, you know, provide. And if they don't, then you have to hold them accountable. We can go back to all of this in history. And, you know, it's so important to really look at what's happening in a historical context as well as to how empires rise and fall, right? A lot of people compare the United States to Rome, but it's, you know, it's like when your people turn on you. Yeah. And then you have enemies are, you know, but nobody's really the worst enemy. We are our own worst enemy. If you look at really what's happening here.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And, you know, I would say my feelings about the Second Amendment have evolved one way and then back another. You know, I started off, you know, again, kind of, I grew up in a conservative area, so there were a lot of guns, not a lot of guns, but enough guns around that I was like, yeah, people should have guns. But I never, you know, once, you know, I grew up, I never had a, was like, I need to go be around guns and do guns. So like, I kind of was like, eh, why do people need guns?
Right.
But then you start to really, you know, if you dig into history, it's like you said, I wonder also if we've been comfortable for so long and we don't teach history. And I remember even in, when I was in school, people would kind of be like, fuck history. It's just history class. Like, you don't really need it, you know, pay attention or learn anything. But you see this pattern throughout history, and you do have to be able to kind of keep governments in check. Otherwise, they sort of do run amok. And it's not saying that we need to go take to the streets, but they need to, you know, that threat needs to be there at least. And, you know, I just think that, you know, people, a big thing against that, I think, is that people just aren't comfortable with guns because they've been, they've just not been around them. And it makes them nervous. We were talking about this the other day. Like, I've been around guns some.
Yeah.
But like, if I go into the coffee shop and there's somebody there, like we were talking about Texas's new concealed carry laws, what we were talking about. And it's like, if I go in somewhere, like I've been around some guns, but I wouldn't say I'm like gun, you know, a gun, yeah, gun person. I don't own a gun yet. But yet, you know, it does make me kind of nervous when I go in and I see somebody with a gun. And I'm like, man, I don't know. Why is there a gun in here? What if somebody grabs that from him? You know, like, I don't know. Like,
you know, there's power there.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? it puts me on edge. And so like me thinking about like being in a society where everybody's packing heat everywhere I go, like
it shouldn't be like that.
I'm going to be like, God, you know, it's going to make me super nervous. I don't know if I want to live in that state either.
Yeah.
And so like, I feel like there has to be some sort of like balance. And I think it takes, again, nuanced conversation so that it's not just ban all guns or go get all the guns. It's also not everybody needs to be carrying a bazooka around with them when they go to the 7-Eleven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's somewhere in the middle.
It's educating yourself about the matter. You know what I mean? A lot of people don't understand like guns in general. It's like, oh, that's bad. You know, that's war. That's going to kill people. What about hunting and all these other things there as well? So it's like educating yourself on like, yeah, what are firearms used for? To protect yourself, to hunt, to do whatever, you know?
As an advocate for the cannabis industry, I have to go with free choice and say that guns don't kill people, people do. Yeah. Same, you know, you don't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not a fan of guns, really. Like, I'm not like a gun person. I don't want to live in a world where everybody has a gun either. But the reality is, we live in a state that's consistently becoming more authoritarian. Yeah. So that is why people are actually getting more guns. In fact, during the pandemic,
a lot more.
A lot. Yeah. The gun sales went through the roof.
People couldn't get were a gun.
Because that, it's that fear. It's like, oh, well, they're going to install martial law and then this and that. And like, and that can very well happen. And that's the thing. Like, that's, you know, that's the dystopian nightmare that we're headed towards because, yeah, we don't want a bunch of people who are idiots having guns and like killing a bunch of people. Like at the same time, why are people doing that? It's always like, why is this person acting this way? Well, because they don't trust the government. Oh, well, why don't they trust the government? Oh, because you lie to them all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, well then stop lying to them. And then, you know, people are going to back off and they're going to be like, okay, well, we all want to maintain this society. It's very easy. If you keep people happy, if you do things that help people, they're gonna be fine with the government, but that's not what's happening here. And so the gun issue is it's an American issue too, largely, because in a lot of countries, like let's say Australia, people don't have guns and they're completely banned. But also people have more freedom in other ways. They have nationalized healthcare, you know, they have
stress
other things.
It's not there.
Yeah, it's not the same structure. So it's kind of disingenuous to compare, you know, oh, well, Australia doesn't have guns. It's like, well, but also we're a nation that's built, you know, we colonized this country, you know, it was built on the backs of slaves, all these things that people don't want to talk about, all of that happened. And so you're going to have this pushback from people who feel like, hey, it's my patriotic right, because there's always that threat that the government was the problem, right? It was the British for the American revolutionists, but it's now it's like, are we having taxation without representation? Because I feel like we are. I feel like my taxes are going to kill children in Palestine, and I don't want that to happen, right? If you believe in the economic system that's presented to you, then your taxes are going to fund things that none of us voted for, none of us wanted.
Yeah. Yep.
And so am I being represented by my taxes? No. Then, yeah, let's have a Boston Tea Party, right? But you're not going to, that's not how it is anymore. So people have this need to feel, okay, we're going to protect ourselves. The other point is that there are populations in America that are targeted, are being targeted, right? You talk about Black Lives Matter, you talk about minorities. A lot of minorities are often the ones that are feeling more in danger from the police. So if these people are feeling like they're oppressed by the system, then, well, if they are oppressed, then why would they not allow, be allowed to have guns? And these are the people that often are have criminal, some people, you know, a lot of them have criminal records. And I don't think it should be as easy as saying, oh, if somebody has a criminal record, they can't have a gun. It's like, okay, let's be specific. What kind of
what
record?
Was it?
What kind of person is this? Is this a person that is psychologically fine? Like, you can have all those, you know, hoops. Like, oh, let's go get a license. Like, how you go get your license? Like,
it doesn't have to be super easy to go get a gun. Yeah. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, as long as it's like, you know, if you're gonna go get a license and it's tedious, then that's fine. You can go get a gun and you can have some sort of track record as to who's getting it. And I'm totally cool with that. But to make it illegal, I think it's just, it's not going to go well. I think you're going to open it up to a black market. And yeah, I mean, I think there's sensible legislation we could put on that. And that's like the best argument. Because if you go on either end where it's like everybody's free for all and then, you know.
Yeah.
But it always goes back to how comfortable are people in their government. And if people aren't comfortable in their government, well, then they're going to always find ways to get some sort of protection.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. You mentioned earlier, you touched on the vaccine, talking about, you know, getting the vaccine or not, you know, and we talk about that a lot. You know, I have not been shy about the fact that I've opted not to do the vaccine, you know. And
that's the first question anyone asks nowadays. Like, hey, yeah, I'm like, yeah. Hey, how?
You know, I was seeing as well where, you know, there was talk about a passport, and I think that's been killed. But, you know,
yeah.
And then I saw also where, you know, HIPAA doesn't apply for businesses when it comes to the vaccine. So legally, like, you're going to have to answer this question if you want to go conduct business somewhere in another business. I don't know. This is also part of that Orwellian evolution where it's like, this is exactly why when you start putting all this together, this is why people take it to the next step, right? Where they're like, I have a magnet sticking to my arm because of the microchip in the vaccine, you know, and it's like, you don't, that's why those people take that next step, is because of this kind of shit that they talk about openly, but quietly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Those videos I've seen those videos. I thought it was a hoax on TikTok, but I haven't looked into it enough to have an opinion on it. But
here's what doesn't make sense to me about it. Just logically. And I'm no expert. I'm an evolved idiot, obviously. Is even if it was a microchip in your arm, that microchip, for it to be in a solution, to be injected into through a liquid into your vein, would have to be so small. Yeah. There's no way that a normal like magnet would stick to your arm through your skin on something that
to
small.
To magnify that much?
Like,
yeah.
I don't think there's enough metal there.
Oh, I mean, I don't know, like, how
I'm not a microchip expert.
Not a microchip expert, but I mean, you know, here's the thing. It's like, I'm open to questioning everything, right? I'm an open-minded skeptic is what I consider myself, right? So I, like, if somebody shows evidence, like, hey, this is happening, I don't necessarily, it doesn't mean it's necessarily a microchip. I don't know what it could be. I don't know. We don't know. That's the thing. When you don't know, it's hard to, like, when you don't trust the sources of government, when they've lost credibility, it's kind of hard to, like, say one way or the other. But as far as the vaccine goes, right, as far as, like, for me, I've never been an anti-vaxxer. I've always gotten every single vaccine ever except the flu, because that was like a, you know, like, oh, you should get it to be safe. And, you know, I never got sick, so I never got it. And I've been always my whole life. And maybe this is from my parents, you know, deciding not to give me Ritalin as a child. Like, no, I don't want to put, you know, big pharma in my body. I don't take, you know, any antidepressants, anything like that. If I've just always been pro, like, marijuana, like, marijuana will solve, like, you know, like, it'll help me sleep. I've had issues sleeping, so marijuana helps. Cramps, marijuana helps. you know, like, it just anything that is, like, with the ADD, like, sativa helped a lot. Like, just, I've always tried to take it the natural route. Now, so that's me. And so when they're telling, the CDC says, well, we're launching these experimental vaccines and we're, you know, fast-forwarding the process and people are having adverse reactions to it all over the world. And on top of that, you're not allowed to talk about it. I'm like, okay. Oh, and you can't sue them if anything happens. Okay, well then, no, thanks. I'm good.
Was it that many people that got sick? It seemed like it. Per, you know, if you put it over the scale, it didn't seem like that much from what I read. But.
Yeah, that's the thing. What is being put out in the mainstream, it's not that many people at all. Then you go and watch certain shows that break it down and they show you the language and it's actually more than what they're saying. I would recommend Ryan Christian and The Last American Vagabond. He's done great work on that. And he literally just says, here's the data, look at it, make your own choice. And so that's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, okay, this is suspect. I'm not going to make, you know, I'm not going to say that I know enough to say that there is actual toxicity aimed at killing people, but I am going to say, I'm just going to opt out of this vaccine because I don't trust it. I don't think that it's developed yet. And like, I also, even if it was, I'm not the kind of person to feel like I need to take this. I've already had COVID. So I know it was bad. People saying COVID is a hoax, that's the wrong approach. It's not a hoax. It's a real virus. It's a real virus. I had it. It's no fun. You know, it put me under the weather for a week and a half. Like it's not, you know, we all had it. Everybody in my household had it. And it's real. Now, most people aren't going to die from it. That's the thing. Most people aren't going to die from it. Most people are going to be okay. And there are a lot of the people who did die who were younger had underlying conditions. And I've known people who have passed away from COVID close to me and they had underlying conditions. A lot of them had breathing problems or were severely overweight or had other issues, right? So yeah, the general population isn't, it's not like a pandemic of like when you had like, I don't know, polio, and even that could be a question. So, because a lot of people compare this to polio, like, oh, you have to get a vaccine.
It's not the same at all.
No.
And that's the most frustrating thing that I've seen is like, why exactly? And the only thing that it comes down to me is like, and especially with this patent call where they're not, I think they've reversed, they're not going to allow the patent to be released on the vaccines, if that's still correct. You know, it comes down to greed because otherwise the messaging that they should be telling people is exercise, eat better.
Take your supplements, vitamins, everything. Yeah,
like take better care of yourselves. Again, personal responsibility, just like you said earlier.
And ivermectin. So we took ivermectin where we were sick. And this is another issue that I had. My friend was like banned on Twitter for like 48 hours because he put the word on Twitter. Like, so for me, it's like, what are you guys hiding if we can't even talk about it? Hey, I don't want to take the shot. I don't want to, you know. So why am I not allowed to talk about ivermectin? It was given to a lot of people in third world countries in India and Mexico. My brother went to Mexico. He brought some back and we took it and we gave it to our family and we were fine. Like now, you know, like it's funny because my parents and my sister got the vaccine. My brother and I were not getting it and they keep trying to tell us to get it. And we're like, no, we're fine. And I don't care if you take the vaccine or not. Like that's your choice. Have at it, whatever.
Yeah.
I care about the vaccine passports. Now, you said that it doesn't look like it's happening. And I actually have to disagree with that. Like, I think
this is why you're here.
So private businesses are pushing this, right? And the government isn't going to push it. That's how they wash their hands of the matter. They're, well, we're not going to push it. But, oh, you want to go to a football game? Oh, you have to show proof of your vaccine card. They're giving you the option right now to go get a test and say if you're negative, right? But, oh, you still have to wear a mask if you do this. Like now the CDC is saying you don't have to wear a mask if you got the vaccine, which is really interesting because a lot of people are like, wait a minute, the vaccine doesn't necessarily stop COVID. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, so I'm going to wear my mask. And it's like, instead of saying, wait a minute, the CDC has been going back and forth on a lot of things. Why are you guys, you know? So there's that. And then there's also the fact that the private corporations like airlines and all of these, you know, private entities can say, you're not allowed to fly unless you have a vaccine. So that is a very real threat that the government can say, well, we're not going to impose it. But, you know, the private sector can. And the private sector, of course, knows that this is what's happening. Now, the other issue with the vaccine passports that I have is that they're painting them as a cool new app that you can have on your phone.
Right? I hate apps, just for the world to know.
The wallet. They're like, you add it to your wallet. And so what they're working on is adding the like having your medical history right there on your iPhone them everything about you, and it's right there included with your banking information.
What happens when you lose your phone?
Social media, exactly. So this is what's going on. There is now this whole new era that you are data, I am data, you are data.
Yeah.
We are data. We're a bunch of data for
ones and zeros.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they're data mining you constantly, trying to figure out how to advertise to you. We've seen
this. What is it like? Facebook.
Are we developing a matrix within a matrix? Right.
I think this is a matrix. I don't know. Yeah. But if you go and watch the recent conference at Davos, right? They talk about this great reset. They talk about it. It's a bunch. It's like a conference with a bunch of billionaires come in. And it's a bunch of important people tied to Google, Bank of America, Wall Street, you name it. They're all there and they're having conferences on how to build back better. This is a term that's being used by the Democratic Party a lot. How we're going to build back better. We're going to come back stronger, rebuild, da, 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 da. And so they use the same term a lot, terminology, but they have focused a lot on this ability to incorporate big tech with your human body. Some people say that is transhumanism. You can take it as however you want. But what I am saying is there is a merger of big tech with the biology of human beings. That's like the AI dream, right? We're gonna give AI some human properties, and we're gonna give humans some AI properties. And we're also going to incorporate technology with how you are as a person. So they're doing a lot of just like advancements on that. And that's going to also allow for the privatization of so many things, including the climate. Like a lot of people think, oh, the Green New Deal and the Sunrise Movement, they're all great. But when you look into who funds the Sunrise Movement, who created the Sunrise Movement, it is a subsidiary of the Sierra Club. The Sierra Club is a gigantic like NGO for the Democratic Party, basically. Like they have never really done anything like that's great for the environment. They're tied to big money. And so that's the daddy of the Sunrise Movement. And then you look into like the Green New Deal. It's a resolution. It doesn't have anything to do with fracking. It doesn't talk about like where all this money is coming from and what they're really going to do. And it doesn't really have a focus on nuclear energy, which is way better than like, say, you know, coal and other forms of energy. And all of these things are being discussed at this conference by a bunch of billionaires. And they're talking about a certain type of capitalism of how to invest in this and how to invest in that. And they show this video, which I think everybody should look up. It's a video of what they mean by like the Great Reset. And it's like creating this beautiful picture of like everybody jumping around in like a meadow and everybody's happy and, you know,
everybody's on Prozac.
Yeah. And it reminded me of Brave New World, like while watching it and like, oh, here's a Soma. Take it. And you'll be happy. Like, it was actually frightening to see that. And, you know, I could talk about that forever, but it's like one of the people I would say has talked about that endlessly is Whitney Webb. And yes. She has made the connections to all of these things in a very scary yet like you can research it and find the receipts to everything she says. And so I think we, you know, is it a conspiracy to think that these people are conspiring in a room? I don't think that's how it's happening. I think it happens in a way where they have the same interests. They're all part of the same class, and they are all they're going to benefit if certain things happen with the rest of the population that's kind of in their way. And so that's kind of how it happens, right? Life imitates art.
Yeah.
We've done this many times. There's so many books on this. You can look at there was that movie with, it was like, about where there's two planets and Earth, planet Earth, there's the poor people. And then the rich people go to another planet and they never age. And like, it's like the more money you have, I forget what it's called. I
remember this movie.
But yeah, but it's like, it's crazy. And like, I feel like kind of that's where we're headed.
Is that where they take baths in the blood of the ground up infants or something?
It's like, yeah, but I mean, but it's not really like a crazy thing to think about that there's a handful of rich people that are afraid that eventually we're all going to get pissed, because you have to think about how this isn't just happening in America.
Everywhere.
Protests aren't happening in America. They're happening in France.
Yep.
They're happening in India. They're happening all over the world. Germany, like protests against lockdowns were happening all over England, especially London. All of this is happening because people are like, wait a minute, what is going on here? Like, what, a lot of the things we were told about COVID aren't true. What is their end goal here? What, like, you know, and you can't ask those questions, which makes it worse. It makes me question it even more. If I'm not allowed to ask, why has Fauci like been exposed as an entire liar? Oh, well, let's look at Fauci's history, right? Yeah. During the AIDS epidemic. Let's look at how like he treated Haitian people who were dying. Like just, there's so much information on Fauci, yet he's not even a doctor. He's not even a scientist. He gets not a real doctor
guy at this point.
Yeah. Like he was propped up in a certain way, and like he's not somebody that should have been in government, yet somehow he ends up there.
I mean, now the lab leak theory is being taken more and more serious, even though you'll still, like you said, get demonetized or taken off if you talk about it online. But I mean, it's more and more seems like the most logical scenario for it, you know. It's which makes it all that much more frustrating. But it just shows how it all ties together, exactly like you said. And if the people in those rooms aren't making like choices, knowing that they're building something without realizing it, somebody in the room needs to realize that and you know, be able to make conscious choices that benefit people, which kind of leads me to my last thing. I know you've got a heart out here, so I want to keep honest to that. But I wanted to get you your take on the Mr. Gavin Newsom's recall and what you where you thought.
Get him out of here.
Where's that at? You know, because to me it seems like it's just going to be a big shit show. Like I see him offering people like free money and like all sorts of shit right now.
He's gonna have to. I mean, that's his only salvation. Even progressives who are like, oh well, this is just a right wing thing. It's like, no guys, it's not. Look, I still know people in the service industry and they all leave Democrat. And guess what? The moment he started playing like a gigantic hypocrite and started allowing his friends in the film industry to have, oh, you know, they're open, like basically restaurants. I mean, you know, when you're filming things, your people are in close proximity. They were allowed to have their catering and their food. And then businesses are getting shut down, small businesses specifically, not. I'm not talking about like gigantic corporations, like, you know, whatever. I'm talking about like small business owners with bars and with, you know, who this is their life.
Single location places.
This is their dream.
Yeah. Martial arts academies.
Yeah,
exactly.
All those places and salons and nails, all these people that might have been, hey, I'm a Democrat, you know, I live in. No, he turned them all against him by not dealing with the situation the way he should have. At all. Like, and again, like I go back to the hospitality industry, people in Florida who were in the hospitality industry are doing way better than people in here that got shut down for so long and opened back up and then shut down again. And there was not enough money. We live in one of the most expensive states, if not the most expensive state in the entire country. And you didn't give people enough help. And by the way, the progressives were trying to push California healthcare for all. He didn't even do that. So what exactly is saving him? This isn't a hyper-partisan thing. It shouldn't be. This is like, hey, you screwed up and we're holding you to account.
Yeah.
So either you buck up or you get the hell out. And it's not like they're going to be anybody good to replace him. It's not like
that's my next question.
It's like, come on.
What's let's this be next real snakehead here. That comes
oh,
up?
Jesus Christ. Yeah, like, no, like, but politicians need to fear people, I think, at this point, because they've gotten away for so long without, you know, with just acting like they are above you and me, and they're not. They're supposed to serve you.
Yeah.
And that idea has gotten so twisted. And when I saw him going out to dinners, and when I saw his auntie Nancy Pelosi going to salons, when the rest of us proletariat don't get to do that, it's like it does something to you. You're like, wait a minute, who are you? Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the hypocrisy of it all, I think, is what really angered people. And also, obviously, the economic fallout.
Yeah. We've talked about it many times on here. It comes down to, we talk about leadership in general, but it comes down to a failure of leadership, because to me, like, and we talked about this, you know, because at the beginning I was very cautious about the vaccine, you know, coronavirus and everything. But as more information came out, my position on it evolved and it changed. And I never understood why here in particular, in this state, leadership never evolved or revised its recommendations or its tier system and what that meant. Like, if you were allowed to do certain things, it didn't have to be a blanket policy. It's like, no, we're just going to shut down the whole region because we're too stupid to do anything else, or too lazy, or, you know, I don't know what the reason
is. They dug their heels.
But there is something more to being a politician than being a spokesperson. When a disaster or something bad happens, you actually have to provide leadership.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%, 100%. And he did it, and he failed, and he should be held accountable. And that goes for any politician. And, you know, you can look at Cuomo and look at how much worse he was, because he was terrible, too.
Absolutely.
I mean, he allowed, you know, old people to die.
Complete
and
hypocrite.
And completely covered it up. And nobody was talking about it except one guy. And, you know, that guy was just, the whole party railed against him. And it's crazy to me that these politicians get away with all of this. And it's to me, like Nancy Pelosi, for instance, she gets to go and parade around and say, we feed them. We feed them. And it's like,
so Marie Antoinette.
And, you know, and then the media, all they're like, oh, Nancy Pelosi's pink mask matched her outfit, or Jill Biden is bringing scrunchies back. The 90s are back. And it's like, you know, there are people out there who are fighting, you know, the mainstream media narrative. But for me, like where I'm at, it's like, now I want to go deeper than that. Yes, we know the mainstream media lies, but what exactly are they lying about? Why are they lying? Yeah. What are the connections behind with these powerful corporations and these powerful people? And like, how do we get people to realize this, right? Like, there's a lot of projects I want to start, and a lot of projects that my co-hosts want to start too, to kind of bring information to the younger generation who are being led astray by people like Bausch, like people who don't know what they're talking about. And just they're such a short-minded generation with like TikTok videos that are like a minute long. But there's got to be a way.
It affects everybody. I know 50-year-olds that are on that shit.
Exactly. Well, we're all like we're a society here in America where it's like, we have to grind and hustle. It's that whole mentality of success is put it against you, right? Like, we live in a very like fast paced society compared to if you go to Europe,
especially here.
I would say it's only worse than like New York City.
Bigger
or
cities,
But other than that, like, this is, you know, this is pretty much how it is. And if you go to like Europe or you go to South America, people are more laid back. They're like, oh, let's go have wine in the middle of the day. Let's go take
life.
A long nap. Yeah. Like, it's like the joy to be. Like, it's like, oh, it's so nice. But here it's like, no, work, hustle. And we also have to take into consideration like how that affects your mind, and like how you need to like escape. This is why America has so many people that are addicted. And that's my co-host is starting a series, To Hell and Back, next Thursday, talking about the opioid crisis, because that is something that is not even talked about that much. And it's affecting so many people, you know, killing so many people, way more people than guns, way more people than anything else. So it's crazy. And that's by design.
Yeah. I'm that's one of the reasons I love to see, you know, cannabis legalization grow. There's like about a 25% decrease in opioid deaths in places where cannabis is legalized. So It's been a serious issue for sure. And it is one of the things that I like about your show, The Convo Couch, for those of you listening, is the fact that, you know, people don't pay attention. Like you said, they get emotional. They don't pay attention. And like, we have to bring the conversation, because even the politicians don't discuss policy anymore. And you all do, like, that's one of the things I like about it, really, that I really enjoy is when you break down the policy of something and explain it to people, because I think that's one of the biggest things is people feel overwhelmed. You know, it's like, and you even hear the politicians say it, like, they dumped this on us at 24 hours and it's 800 pages and, you know, they're voting on it. And it's like, they haven't read it. And, you know, these are decisions that are affecting all of us. It's irresponsible to vote on something you've not read.
800 pages.
Exactly. Like, can we not put this stuff in common terms and put it in, say, a 10-page report that anybody can read before it gets voted on? Maybe we could even take polls from the American people and see what they think about it.
Right?
Let us vote on how our tax dollars are spent.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if you look at the language, it is confusing for a lot of people. And, you know, like, we try to break it down. But I mean, even us, that requires time. Like, yeah. Spent. Like, I read I forget what it was. I think it was HR1 and a few other ones that were like 700, 600 pages. It's like, that takes time. And it's also, you have to like translate the jargon into common language. It's like reading Shakespeare and then trying to write No Fear for Shakespeare, like putting it in like modern terms and like cheating and like, here's the condensed normal version of what's Cliff going notes. On. Yeah. It's hard. And most people aren't going to do that. Who has time to do that? They don't even have time, and it's their job, let alone a person that's working, you know, and has kids and then has whatever else they do. Like, it's designed that way. And the only way we break through that is if we have more of us having these conversations, more of us doing independent media. CNN isn't going to tell you what's in these bills. They're not. No. They don't care. They're just going to give you the fluff and they're going to say, oh, it's great. Joe Biden's doing great. He's doing much better than Trump. And Joe Biden's deporting more people than Trump did in his first 45 days. I mean, it's all these things that now with a Joe Biden presidency, that's one of the things that I was afraid of, was that people are going to go back to sleep. I don't think it's as easy as it was before because of all of us, you know, screaming and all of that. But people are still like being fed the lies by mainstream media. When Trump was out there and he was like, we're going to take their oil. They were like, oh my God, he's going to take their oil. And it's like, well, Biden's doing the same thing.
We're going to take the oil either way.
But he's like putting a nice, smiley, friendly face and like, oh, Uncle
it's marketing.
Joe. And that's it. They're PR. They're PR puppets for the empire. And that's all it is. And so once you come to terms with that, it does seem very dire and dark and very cynical. But I think that's the step most people need to take, is to understand, like, politicians are effectively like just running PR for the empire. And like, yeah, they'll do a couple things here and there to keep you, pacified and OK. But they're not really calling the shots here. You have to go after the agencies that are covert and expose them. And then when you do that, well, you do put a target on your back. But I think if there's a lot of us, right, what are they going to do?
There's like, more of us than them.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
We could continue talking for probably another hour and a half or so.
For sure.
But I greatly appreciate you coming on. Really good stuff, you know, keep fighting the good fight, and we'll all keep kind of promoting, you know, just having conversation, if nothing else. I think having dialogue and uniting the people and showing the common bond, you know, think about it globally, because we, you know, the pandemic has shown it. We are all on this big globe, the spaceship called Earth. We're all on it together. And we've all got to unite and communicate, especially if we're going to have a future that is good for everybody.
Yep.
Is there some psilocybin in this water?
No.
Yes, yeah. No,
not yet.
Well, where can people find you?
People can find me on YouTube. And I forgot to mention, we're also on Rockfin. It's a new cryptocurrency platform. It's called ROKFIN. And that's been our salvation since we're demonetized. So we've been on there for a while. I would ask you guys to check it out if you have, if you've done your due diligence on YouTube and you want to talk to them, for sure, email them. They accept all kinds of media. And basically it's a platform that runs on cryptocurrency, and, you know, cryptocurrency is also under attack right now, but it's going to come back up. They're kind of don't panic. They're validating it by trying to control it. So that's an important point to make on that. But yeah, so it's called Rockfin, and they have an Android app and an Apple app. They're going places with it, and I'm excited for it because we have a nice following there, and everybody's on there. Jimmy Dore's on there. A bunch of people are on there right now, and it's nice. Pretty awesome. And you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and you can find me on Twitter at Fiorella_IM. Thank you guys for having me on. This is a really cool conversation. I love shows like this because it's like very free.
Yeah, it's been really, really enjoyable having you on. We'll have to have you again on sometime, in the future.
All right.
For sure.
Well, this has been another episode of the Evolved Idiots Podcast. As always, guys, peace and love.
Power to the people.